Welcome to the George Wilder Jr. Show, live from Chicago. George Wilder Jr. Show. Keep it right here. It should be fun.
The hardest working man in internet radio is my father, George Wilder Jr., and here he is.
Thank you, everybody, and welcome to the George Wilder Jr. Show, broadcasting live from Chicago, out of Chicago, Illinois. And it, as I, you know, look at out of my studio window, the sun is shining. It wasn't shining this morning when we were out there freezing our asses off. You know what I'm saying? We were freezing our. This is supposed to be spring. It's the middle of May. Just about the last week of May. You know, I mean, it's ridiculous. What can I say? Anyway, welcome to the show, everybody. Thanks again for all your feedback, all your input, all your positive and creative criticism of me and the show. But majority of the time, the criticism is just positive. And I want to thank everybody, because if it wasn't for you, I wouldn't be here, because I wouldn't, you know, I just wouldn't do it. I mean, you are the people who are keeping me on the show, and you know who you are, and I know who you are, and that's great. That's wonderful, and I'm glad you're here. This is the George Wilder Jr. Show. If you're more inclined, you can, you know, look me up on Facebook, right here on Blog Talk Radio. Click like and all that kind of stuff. I'm also on Amazon.com. I got lots of work up there, so feel free to download or to read any of that stuff. Some of it's pretty good, if not all of it. You know, I've been called a great writer. I think some people are just over-exaggerating that a bit. But anyway, it's a lot of good stuff up there. And check that stuff up. Check it out on Amazon. If I'm stuttering a little bit because, you know, we were just, like I said, we were just outside. And it's pretty cold in the city of Chicago. We're near the lake, and it's colder near the lake, but it's also nicer near the lake. I think it's great. I always like to live near the water for some reason. I don't know. The breeze that comes off the lake, folks, is just phenomenal. All right, this is the George Wilder Jr. Show. This is May 17, 2016. And we are on the air. Thanks for being here once again. All right, let's move right along. Well, what are we going to talk about first? Maybe public speaking. I don't know. I did a page on public speaking, and it's something that I've done in my life. Not a whole lot of public speaking, but I've done a lot, and I'm intrigued by it. Whether it pays or not, obviously it pays. And anybody who wants to be a public speaker wants to get paid for what they're doing. But it's a lot of avenues out there. It's a lot of groups out there that are actually looking for public speakers. Stand up there in front of an audience and just, you know, talk. You know, I mean, my first time, I think, if I want to talk about public speaking, I think the first time I've done public speaking, I was nervous as hell. My knees were shaking. But you know what? As I was talking to my audience, it was small, but as I was talking to the audience, they were enjoying what I was saying, but they had no idea that I was about to crumble on stage, on the floor, to the floor, because I was so shaky. I was nervous. I was totally nervous. But after a while, I started to relax because I saw everybody, you know, actually paying attention to what I was trying to say, but it is true. The worst thing, the more public, if I can say this, public speaking, some people would rather die than to speak in public. You know, the worst fear that people have is not cancer, is not a stroke, not diabetes. The worst fear some people have is public speaking, talking in front of an audience. And it is so easy. The first few minutes, I mean, you really get – I remember the first time I sung in public, and I was a teenager. We had a band. And I remember the first time I sung, the same thing came over me as I did when I was talking to these folks. As I was singing the song, my knees were buckling under me, you know. But everybody at the backyard party where we were playing were enjoying the music. They were enjoying me. They were enjoying the entire band. But the singer, I was out front. I felt like I could just fall. I was so nervous. And my voice was shaking a little bit, but I don't know if anybody could tell that. But I could. I could. That's the greatest thing about public speaking. You can be as nervous and as scared as you want to be. But the audience, they don't know that. They know that to them, you exert confidence. They look at you, they're looking up at you as someone they wish they could do. They wish they could be a public speaker. But, you know, once you get used to public speaking, it's a piece of cake, believe me. But when you're first starting, the butterflies in the stomach definitely going to come. It only means that you're human. I did a page on public speaking because I'm going to be doing a few of those kinds of things coming up in the future. And being a public speaker, just like being an author, you need to surround yourself with other public speakers and other authors, someone who know what you're going through and may can help you. You know what I'm saying? You want to surround yourself with the people who are doing some of the same things you're doing. That's the best way to actually go forward. And to be a public speaker, if you're going to – I know a lot of people out there. I know a lot of friends on Facebook and elsewhere. They want – and authors, totally authors. Authors are one of the main group of people who are sought out for public speaking. And even as I do the radio show here, and I do it just about every day, 4 days a week, and – this is a form of public speaking because I'm talking to you and you are the public. No matter where you are in the world, if you're listening to this show, that means you're listening to me as a public speaker, as goes any talk show host or any television host. You know, if you're watching Ellen or Steve Harvey or some of these other shows and they're speaking to the camera, they're speaking to the public. So therefore that's public speaking also. Anytime you're speaking to an audience, even if you can't see that audience, but you know that audience is there, that's public speaking. There are times when I'll come on the radio and I'll just start speaking without even really knowing that there is maybe, you know, hundreds or thousands of people who have listened to the show. And sometimes I'll be nervous. I said, damn, I got to, wow. But then I'll just come on and I'm so used to coming on to the show. I'm so used to doing it that, you know, I just come to my studio, you know, hook up a show, book a guest here or there. And, you know, and just, you know, grab the mic and start doing it. All of a sudden, I'm getting calls and all that kind of thing, inboxes, and then, hey, man, you're great. Your show is great. I'm a fan, all that kind of thing. That's great. That's wonderful. And I want to help other people who want to be public speakers out there in the auditorium facing 500 or 600 people or less, you know, because public speaking, it is great. You can there's always events going on around town where they're in need of public speaking, especially if you're a writer, if you're an author. I mean, because you know, there's so many people who want to be authors. There's so many people who want to learn how to write, who want to be writers, and your input and your knowledge of it can help them greatly. I mean, I'm talking about colleges, universities, high schools, grammar school kids. I mean, if you're an author, you are a welcome public speaker anywhere. There's public speaking jobs I've turned down or I didn't have the time to go to be a part of, but I'm always available for public speaking within reason, okay? Within reason. And so I want to try to reach out to some of those people. This show is not called public speaking. I didn't put it on the studio screen that it's going to – it's just something I'm just throwing out there. Hopefully a lot of people will call in or just sit back and relax and learn something about public speaking and want to become a public speaker. My guest today is author Chris Jones, and are the Democrats in trouble? I have a clip for that. And this should be a fun show for people. And so thanks for tuning into the show. I'm going to talk more about public speaking because it's you can make pretty good money at being a public speaker. You can make a lot of money at being a public speaker. Public speaking entails, I mean, when you are talking in front of an audience, one of the things you want to be, you want to smile and just have fun. Anytime you're smiling and having fun, the audience will know that, and they will smile and have fun back with you. So anytime you're getting up in front of a lot of people and you have to speak, smile and have fun. Speak loud so people can hear you. You know, speak loud. But you don't want to speak so loud you're going to bust someone's eardrums. You want to speak loud enough so they can hear you and understand what you're saying. And another thing, you want to relax when you're up there on that stage. Relax. Be yourself. Do not try to talk a different way. Talk the way you usually talk. As long as you come off clear and concise where people can understand you, talk the way you talk. Excuse me. And know your audience. I mean, that helps a lot when you know your audience. You know, I mean, you don't want to talk. You know your audience so you can kind of mirror your subject matter to that audience. Say if you're an author and you're talking about writing, make sure that your audience are filled with people who want to be writers, who are aspiring writers, who will know what you're talking about. You don't want to have an audience of electricians and talk about writing a book. That's not going to get it. You know your audience. Make sure your audience is the same as the subject matter that you're going to be talking about. That will help you a lot. And be confident. As a public speaker, you want to be confident. Because if you're confident up there, the people are going to be, you know, they are going to be confident with you. Be confident in what you're talking about. Be confident in what you're saying. Be confident that you're doing a good job. Even though you might be nervous, your legs might be shaking, but appear to your audience to be confident and claim attention. That means you want their undivided attention. You want that audience undivided attention to look at you, to focus on you, to focus on your message. You have to have attention. They have to be sitting like in that chair, like straight up, looking at you, listening to what you're saying. You don't want an audience where you cannot claim their attention, because if you cannot claim their attention, you're dead. I mean, if you're speaking to an audience and everybody in that audience, they're on their cell phones playing games or whatever, they're on Facebook, that means that you do not have their attention. It ain't happening. So if you don't have that audience attention, then you might as well just walk on off the stage. All right, and be knowledgeable. Knowledgeable means knowing about what you're talking about. Don't start talking in front of people about something you know nothing about and they know nothing about. They're going to ring you right off that stage. Be knowledgeable of what you're talking about and be confident. And you always do, always wrap up your speech on time. Okay? Face your audience. Use more gestures. Sometimes telling a joke can kind of, lift the atmosphere. You know, tell a joke, be humorous. Audiences love that. Make them laugh, even though you're talking about something serious. So those are some of the elements, some of the criteria for being a speaker. I'm pretty sure there's a lot more out there. But this is just a few of them, okay? And you can ask yourself the question, why do we speak as a public speaker? We speak to inform, communicate, we speak to educate, and we speak to entertain. All of those elements work together as a public speaker. And hopefully if you're out there and you're listening, and I know you are, and if you want to be a public speaker or you know someone that wants to be a public speaker, those are a few of the elements for being a public speaker. And it's not rocket science. It really isn't. I mean, it really isn't. So give it a shot, because I've done it before and I'm hoping to do it again. I'm pretty sure I will do it again a few more times. Actually, I'm public speaking every time I'm on the air here. It's public speaking. But, in front of a large audience is a different thing. People staring back at you, all those eyes are on you, and everything. And if you have to, you walk out on that stage, with a speech. I mean, you walk out there with something written down. You won't get as nervous. And even if you're reading a script, try not to take your eyes off the audience for too long looking down at your script. Look down, look up, look down, read, look up, go back and forth. But never, ever go out on the stage and keep your head down at the podium looking at a script and reading. That's not good. You look down, you look up, and you always look at your audience. And it would help if you would try to memorize some of the speech before you go on stage to give a speech. It would be better. That way you can coordinate between looking at the script, reading it, and then putting your eyes back on the audience, looking at the script, putting your eyes back on the audience, That's the way the professionals do it. That's the way I've seen them do it. So that's enough on the George Wilder Jr. Show about public speaking. That's enough. And I think All right. Welcome to the George Wilder Jr. Show. Author Chris Jones will be on the show, hopefully. Reason why I say hopefully, because the first time I've asked him on the show, I think there was a little screw up or something, and I had to wind up rescheduling him. He sounds like a good kid, a great person. So we're going to have him on the show and have a really nice conversation. That's about all that's going to be on the show, is a nice conversation. And for Democrats, they're in trouble. I mean, you got some Harry Reid. I mean, this guy, if you don't know who Harry Reid is, and you probably don't even know about anything about your government, Harry Reid is the minority in the Senate, in Congress. He's the minority. He's always saying something stupid. I mean, some people just need to retire. Some people, I mean, he's about 80. Why do you constantly want to, and he's probably losing his mind in the way of Alzheimer's. And I don't want to, wish that on anybody, but it's time for some new blood in the Senate and the United States Senate. It's time for some new blood. Harry Reid is just, you've never seemed like he's pushing. It seems as if he's actually going more to the right than to the left. And he's a Democrat. You know, a lot of Democrats seem to be doing that in Congress, moving more to the right than to the left. I hate it when they when a Democrat calls themselves a moderate Democrat. That's not a moderate Democrat. That's a Republican in Democratic skin. So the Dems are in trouble. And because when I say they're in trouble, that means there's a possibility they could lose in November and we will get Donald Trump as president. But when I think about it today, Tuesday the 17th, this is a primary for Hillary Clinton. And basically, Hillary Clinton and Bernie Sanders. If Bernie Sanders loses in Kentucky or either one of these states, he's done. He's toast. But if he wins both of these states, Hillary Clinton will be weakened. That's about all he can do is weaken her from media reports, you know, because I put my assessment not only on media reports, but on what Bernie himself has said. He said that, you know, it's an uphill battle. These are words coming out of his mouth because I don't trust the media, you know. So I know one of the states is Kentucky. And I'm hearing he must win Kentucky. I think he must win every state is out there. So I'm going to keep my fingers crossed for Bernie Sanders. But if he doesn't get this, then it's going to be Hillary, totally Hillary, and Donald Trump. And Donald Trump, as you probably know, is blasting the hell out of Hillary with dumb shit. I think it's dumb what he's saying about Hillary. But he's like just like any Republican, he's loud. He's ridiculous. He's a bully, and he's got the bully pulpit. The media is tracking his every move, giving him free publicity. Free. I wish I can get free publicity from my books. You know, I mean, I got to pay. I got to pay for it or do it myself, which is a lot of work. But Donald Trump gets free publicity. He gets free television time. He may not even have to run commercials. You know, just go from one media television show to the next, you know. All right. You're listening to the George Wilder Jr. Show on Blog Talk Radio. I will be right back. Stay with me. The George Wilder Jr. Show is now on the air.
Morcellator is increasing the occurrence of uterine cancer, while the FDA sits silent. See the story at drugsafetynews.com.
Bad news
with
for
Hillary
Democrats.
Clinton still the Democratic frontrunner and Donald Trump the presumptive nominee for the Republican Party, it's a lot easier to do hypothetical matchups in polling. About a week ago, Hillary Clinton was leading in the state of Florida by several points, well above the margin of error. Today, less than a week later, it is a statistical dead heat in the swing state of Florida in a race between Donald Trump and Hillary Clinton. In fact, Hillary leads by 1 point in the state of Florida, well within the margin of error. But more importantly, in another swing state, Pennsylvania, Hillary Clinton leads Donald Trump by 1 point, again within the margin of error. In Ohio, Hillary loses to Donald Trump by 4 points. Several analysts have said that if Hillary Clinton wins Florida, she wins the election. Which, the converse of that, if she doesn't win Florida, that means she would have to pick up every single swing state in the general election to win the White House. And these new polls that are coming out are not lending themselves to think that that is quite possible. Or it's certainly not going to be as easy as Hillary Clinton and the Democratic Party thinks that it's going to be. And I know it's early May, and these polls are going to shift one way or the other probably every other week until we get to the general election, or at least a little bit closer to it. So maybe it's not wise to read too much into this right now. But I disagree with that. I think we have to look at these polls today and see where the Democratic Party is already struggling. Now, in the state of Florida, a lot of people have said, a lot of very smart analysts have said that Hillary Clinton's going to win because Trump is so off-putting to Hispanics. And yes, there's a rather large population of Hispanics in the state of Florida. But not everywhere in Florida. And I think that's the thing people miss. I am a lifelong resident of the state of Florida. I am sitting in Florida right now. And I can tell you what we see. We see an abnormally large concentration of hate groups, according to the Southern Poverty Law Center, in the state of Florida. We see large colleges, Florida State University, the University of Florida in Gainesville, University of Miami, University of Central Florida, huge colleges with college-age kids who disproportionately, I shouldn't say disproportionately, who overwhelmingly support Bernie Sanders, not Hillary Clinton. I will be surprised if Hillary Clinton wins the state of Florida. And I say that because, one, I've lived here for 33 years, and I think I know a thing or two about my home state. Another thing they're not considering is the fact that even if she gets ahead in the polls, remember, this is a state that for the last two gubernatorial elections, we have put in a man who should be in prison for the largest Medicaid, Medicare fraud in the history of the United States. Billions of dollars this man's company stole from the federal government, and he had to plead the Fifth Amendment more than 70 times in order to not implicate himself in those crimes. We did it twice, elected this man. So don't think that it's impossible that Donald Trump could win the state of Florida. Criminal behavior clearly doesn't matter. Hell, we put Jeb Bush in twice. We have allowed voter suppression and voter purges to take place in this state enough times that they have flipped entire elections, both the 2000 and the 2004 election. Things are not great in the state of Florida. We're going to be the most affected state in terms of climate change, and yet we have climate-denying people running the state. We elected Marco Rubio twice. So whatever you think about Hillary can win the state of Florida, she could win. She absolutely could. But it's going to take a lot of work. And if she doesn't devote a lot of her time to flipping Florida or keeping Florida blue, she's not going to win. Because Trump supporters are all over this place. And to be honest, I have not seen very many Hillary supporters. Of course, that's anecdotal. I'm in a redder part of the state than most people. So yeah, that's expected. But trust me when I say that Florida's not going to be a cakewalk. And these other two swing states, Ohio and Pennsylvania, also almost going to Trump at this point, or with Ohio going to Trump, this general election is going to be a lot harder than the Democratic Party is admitting to themselves. And every time that happens, they lose. Look, I hate to keep bringing up the election of 2004, but the Democratic Party thought for sure that they were going to win that one because George W. Bush had a 50% approval rating. Millions of people had taken to the streets to protest him, his policies, his wars. He allowed or presided over the country when 9/11 happened, you know, got us into the wrong war at the wrong time with absolutely no end in sight. So we put up John Kerry, a person that people are like, you know, he's decent, but he's not enthusiastic. He's not energizing me. Maybe I just won't vote and, you know, they'll take care of it. They'll vote out Bush. Didn't happen. And that's where we're headed this year. Those who don't know history are doomed to repeat it. And though the Democratic Party likes to think that they're a hell of a lot smarter than the Republicans, they've got a lot of learning to do when it comes to understanding the American public and just having a basic understanding of American electoral history. If they don't wise up now, they're going to lose not just Florida or Ohio or Pennsylvania, they're going to lose the country. Which means they're going to lose the Supreme Court again for another 30 years. They're going to lose the House. They're going to lose the Senate. All because they're not paying attention and they're not taking their opponents seriously.
All righty, let's see, do we have this? Let's go.
Go
the George Wilder Jr. Show is now on the air.
The hardest working man in internet radio is my father, George Wilder Jr., and here he is.
All right, thank you for that gracious introduction. Sorry about the dead air. The clip ended before I knew it. Sorry about the dead air, and thanks for that great introduction. That introduction happens to be the introduction of my son. He recorded that sometime back. We have to actually update that because it's, I believe it's probably over a year old, as you probably know, as you've been listening to the show. And I want to say something about Black people in general, Latinos, the poor. I mean, this is just phenomenal. I mean, Black people aren't doing fairly well in some of these communities. They're poor. I mean, they're the Blacks and Latinos are disproportionate. Their incomes are slightly better than they were maybe 10 years ago, but it's not as it should be. Black people are thought in some cases, in some areas, as being one third of a person. That's not good. And Black people still trail behind whites. It's going to always be that way, it seems like, and especially in creating good jobs and having good paying jobs. You know, your color of your skin dictates how much pay you're going to get, you know, and that's not right. We have these leaders, President Obama included. They have done absolutely nothing for Black people. They have done nothing to try to take Black people out of poverty. And that's terrible. Black people are sunken deeper into poverty while everything goes up, rent going up, mortgages going up, high taxes. You even got some middle class people who have sunk down into poverty because of some of these things. And we have all of these leaders. We have these leaders that they just don't seem to give a damn. They just don't care. They got theirs. You know, they're eating every night. They got their home. They got their big cars. They got their large incomes from basically doing nothing. And Black people are just falling behind. I remember years ago, Lyndon B. Johnson, this guy had a war on poverty. Where is a war on poverty with Barack Obama? Where is a war on poverty with Rahm Emanuel? It's not existent. They don't care. They don't care. They don't care. Just like the crime that's happening in Chicago on the west and south side of Chicago. Just like the mountains of crime, the shootings, 50 shootings, I believe, last weekend. 9 people shot dead. People dying every day all the time in these poor communities. In these communities that the governor and the mayor have forgotten or just don't give a damn. Just let black people shoot each other. What the hell? Who cares? If these kind of killings were going on in affluent areas, if these kind of killings were going on in the area where the governor lives, the area where the mayor lives, do you think they would not solve? But no, it's happening in black neighborhoods, African-American neighborhoods, crime-ridden neighborhoods, where people are just slaughtering each other. They can't come out on the porch and sit on the porch. They can't walk down the street. They can't go to school. They can't play in the park without bullets flying. Do you think this would be happening in affluent areas? No, it would not be. If it was these people, the mayor, the governor, would stop. It would be done. There's people calling for the National Guard in Chicago because of the violence. And I totally agree. I on this show about a few, 6 or 7 months ago, on this show, I suggested that the first thing we need to do to stop crime in Chicago in these neighborhoods, because the police are overwhelmed, or they just incapable of doing their jobs. We need somebody over there that's going to find these dirtbag, gun-toting thugs and get them the hell out of these areas. It's more than just tearing down abandoned buildings. You got to get these terrorists, these thug terrorists. I call them terrorists, okay, because they're over there terrorizing these communities and the police are nowhere to be found. But we have two of the biggest influential leaders in Chicago and in the state of Illinois that's doing nothing whatsoever about protecting the most vulnerable in this state. They're just sitting and letting this happen and going on to other things while people are getting slaughtered. The governor is the state of Illinois, and Chicago is in Illinois. Rahm Emanuel is the mayor of Illinois. These are two of the biggest leaders in this state, letting this happen. In some cases, they don't even mention crime. They don't even mention the crime problem in the city of Chicago, people dying. They go on the Lucas Star Wars Museum. Talk about anything but that. The homeless. And I think Mayor Rahm Emanuel is just the guy's just a fake. He should not be mayor. He doesn't know what the hell he's doing. We got, and in some instances, the governor of Illinois, Bruce Rauner, he doesn't know what the hell he's doing. These people, they just got jobs. They can't seem to solve the murder rate in the city of Chicago. It just goes up and up and up and up and up and up while they sit back and do nothing. I've seen Governor Bruce Rauner come out of his shell a million times, talk about no budget, blaming others for what he's doing, social programs disappearing, but he says nothing whatsoever about the crime problem. About the crime problem in the city of Chicago on the west and south sides of the city. African-Americans shooting and gunning down each other every night, every weekend. Nothing is said. Nothing comes from the governor. Nothing comes from the mayor of Chicago about these crimes. And then we have a new police chief. We are waiting to see what he's going to do, if he can do anything, because he's too overwhelming. This is too overwhelming for him. Crime and shooting, and we've got these elected officials who are just numb to it. You know, it pisses you off. It really pisses you off. All right, you're listening to the George Wilder Jr. Show on Block Talk Radio. Thanks for being here, everybody. Thanks for your kind words. Thanks for downloading. Thanks for just listening to the George Wilder Jr. Show. You miss the show here, you miss a hell of a lot. Always listen to me because, I mean, I put a lot into the show, okay? And I love it when you give me that positive feedback. All right, let's go to the phones. All right, you're on the George Wilder Jr. Show. Go right ahead.
Hey, George. It's Chris.
Chris Jones? Hey, man.
Yes, sir.
I was wondering if
you
– I said, hey, wow. I'm saying, where's Chris, you know, in the back of my mind.
I was in a – I have a long seminar. And it went over, and I was like, let me hit George real quick and let him know I'm on my way, but I am here, sir.
Okay. All right. Tell the audience what are you about and what are you doing, and why should we be listening?
My name is Chris. I am an author. I'm an editor, and I'm a writing coach. And what I do is I help people who want to become influential through writing. So, you know, if you're a thought leader, you're a CEO, you're a business owner, or if you're someone who wants to just learn how to write books for your own personal amusement or for family record's sake or whatever, I help people learn how to write their books, publish, self-publish their books, and, you know, really jump into, if you're an entrepreneur or a business person, you jump into a public speaking sphere usually with your book. So a little bit of all that to really help people be what they need to be.
Wow, God, that's great. That's wonderful. And you also mentioned public speaking. I've been trying to gear people toward public speaking also. Do you think that being an author automatically kind of make you getting you ready to be a public speaker?
It does, George. It's a huge credibility indicator when you go to a meeting planner or you go to someone who has, you know, who has speaking opportunities to say, yeah, I also wrote this book on this particular subject of expertise that I want to talk to your audience about. And so then it shows that you can articulate your thoughts in words. And you can organize your thoughts, and you know, it makes you look more credible. Because it is difficult. There's a lot of work that goes into writing a book, and people do understand that, and they do appreciate that, and they automatically just gives you a leg up. So I think that anybody who wants to get on the public speaking circuit or who wants to, you know, put themselves in that position should definitely write a book. And if not a full book, if you don't get to the point where you're at the, you know, you can write a full book, at the very least start contributing to publications that people read and that people pick up.
Oh, great, great. And you are also the author of The Art and Business of Writing, A Practical Guide to Writing, to the Writing Life.
Yes, yes. And that's and that book, it really spells out for you, if you're a beginner, it really spells out, well, what does the writing life look like? What do my habits need to look like? How do I start writing? Where do I begin? How do I get over the whole imposter syndrome? You know, you're writing a book and you're like, who's going to read my work? I don't even feel worthy to share this with my dog, you know? It helps you get over that sort of feeling. Then it helps you to really get into the mode of, well, how much writing do I have to do? How do I break that down? Because let's face it, everybody's busy, George. We're all busy. We got stuff going on. We got kids. We got soccer.
But we still
need to write the book. So it talks about, well, how do I break that down into, you know, a little bit each day, and how long will it take if you do 500 words a day, it'll take you about 3 months to write a book, 6 months to write a book max, 250, definitely 6 months, but it just breaks it all down for you. Then it teaches you how to market.
Yeah. Writing a book is great. I've written a few of them myself, and so I know a little bit about writing. And I always tell people, if you're going to write a book, no matter if it's fiction or nonfiction, always try to make it fun. Try to make it enjoyable, because I think a lot of people look at a book as being nothing but work. It's work, but you got to make it fun work. What do you think?
Yeah, no, I completely agree. When I was writing my book, I was writing everywhere I was. So if I'm standing at the grocery line, I'm writing my book. I'm at the amusement park, I'm working on a book. I mean, my book traveled with me. But yeah, I think that if it's a subject you're passionate about, it's going to be fun for you to write, because you really want to get that message out to people. Is there something about it that you really want to tell? So it does become fun for you.
Yeah, because if you make your book fun, the person who picks up your book, buy your book, and they start to devour it, read it, they're going to be having fun too, just because you had fun writing it.
Yes, absolutely.
All right. Do you have a copy of your book with you? Would you like to read an excerpt?
Let me pull it up. I've got it on my laptop, but I don't have it really handy. Hold on, let me see.
Okay, all right.
Yeah, because I just got back in. Let me grab that for you then.
Oh, okay. All right. Ladies and gentlemen, this is author Chris Jones on the George Wilder Jr. Show. He's the author of The Art and Business of Writing, A Practical Guide to Writing, to the Writing Life.
All right. So, yeah, I'll read an excerpt for you.
All right. No problem.
Let me get one for you here that I think is really fitting for an audience, especially an audience that's gearing up to write or wants to write.
Yeah, because sometimes this show is just, when I first started this show, it was all about authors. I mean, because I'm an author and
yeah.
I try to, you know, you want to help other writers write, especially if they're serious writers, you know, a serious
yeah.
one. Yeah.
So, how much do you want me to read? Do you have a certain amount?
Maybe a couple of pages.
Okay. So, when I took the first step, I decided to return to writing, I had to change my belief system as a writer and my relationship to the craft and what it was going to be. So I achieved this by writing several affirmations I thought that I would read throughout my day, starting first thing in the morning. It doesn't matter how talented a writer you are, something within, this unrelenting little voice, will tell you that you're not a good writer, that you're unworthy, untalented, and unqualified to write. Some refer to this as the censor, and others call it the imposter syndrome. No matter what name you affix to it, it's a troublemaker not worthy of your audience. This small voice brings all of your fears and insecurities about your writing to your attention every time you sit down to create. It will pursue you with thoughts like, what makes you think you can call yourself an author or a writer? Or, what have you written or published? It will torment you with words like, no one wants to read your book, or what if you fail? This small voice which magnifies your inner fears and doubts is normal. Every writer from J.K. Rowling to Stephen King has dealt with it and continues to do so. The voice never goes away. It just finds a new insecurity to unearth. Did you read that review? It's relentless, but you will learn to recognize its poisonous tongue and you'll silence it. In the film The Lord of the Rings, The Fellowship of the Ring, Samwise Gamgee agrees to join his friend Frodo Baggins on the journey of a lifetime through Middle Earth to Mount Doom to destroy the One Ring. As they approach the edge of the Shire, Samwise realizes that the comfort of his present life would be coming to an end. Stopping in the middle of the field, he says, "This is it. If I take one more step, it'll be the farthest away from home I've ever been." Frodo turns to him, places his hand on his shoulder, smiles and says, "Come on." And the two take the next step and begin their epic journey. If you're ready to write, ready to embark on an incredible journey of your own, then it's time to take that next step. Leave your comfort and security behind and let's journey together. The little voice will tell you that it's scary, and it is, and that you have no business leaving the Shire, but like Samwise, you have a dream, create fulfillment, and that means going places you've never been before to do things you've never done before. That's the writing lifestyle, and it starts with learning how to use and master affirmations and silence the censor and continue to put one foot in front of the other until we get there. Want me to continue? Hello? Hello? Hello?
All this week, the debate has continued over guns and violence in America. But amid all the talk about background checks, magazine clips, there is one statistic you should know.
All right, welcome to the George Wilder Jr. Show. We're back on the air. We had a little glitch here. Go right ahead, Chris Jones.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Where did we leave off? You know.
I had a little glitch here. I'm sorry about that, man. You were reading two pages of your novel, The Art of Business of Writing, A Practical Guide to the Life. I wanted to ask you what do you do? What should a writer do if they should ever come up on writer's block?
Oh, if you come up on writer's block, my first thing to do is to get away. That's the first thing I recommend.
Uh-huh.
Stop where you are. Typically, you stop where you are and just step away from the work. So if you get to a point where you're stuck, it becomes frustrating, and you can usually tell when it gets to that point. What I like to do is do something non-creative. So you can go out, you can wash your car, you can wash the dishes, you can iron clothes, do something that's completely outside of the writing space. Because typically, when you do that, or you go for a job, whenever you do something non-creative, it seems to you know, reignite the whole flow. At least it does that for me.
You're right about that. You said go jogging. A lot of times, when I get writer's block, I'll probably take a walk, a 15, 20-minute walk and around the neighborhood here. And it jogs my creativeness. And I'll come back on my laptop, and I got to get this stuff down before I forget it.
I know.
Yeah.
I hear you.
Yeah.
Yeah, but those are all great ways just, you know, to do it. But, yeah, I mean, just physical movement seems to always work well.
Do you think just sitting and staring at an empty page, you think that will kind of move it a little bit?
No. I've never had
that
experience.
Right. That was fun. That was straight up. So, I mean, when we're talking about the art of writing, what specifically are you talking about, fiction or nonfiction?
I'm a nonfiction writer, so I mean a lot of the stuff that I talk about in the art of writing section of the book can apply to either one. But I work in the nonfiction space, and I typically work with nonfiction writers because I don't read a ton of fiction. But I appreciate the people who write it. I've interviewed a lot of people who write fiction, and man, just the stuff they come up with and how they come up with it, just it's a whole level of creativity that is foreign to me.
Yeah, I do. I think actually fiction is kind of harder than nonfiction, because fiction you have to make up a story actually, and it has to be a good story, a great story. Whereas nonfiction, you're just writing something down that's true, that has happened, you know. So I think there's a big difference, but I do both. I mean, I don't like one over the other. It's writing to me, so.
Yeah, yeah. But I really come to appreciate the creative nonfiction. I love that stuff, though. Do you read a lot? Do you read any of that?
Yeah.
Yeah, so I've come to appreciate that. I really enjoy reading those anthologies that they have at Barnes & Noble, like Ken House and all those, all the great creative nonfiction writers.
Chris.
Yes.
Chris Jones.
Yes. Hello?
Oh, wow. Did we lose him again?
Hello?
The hardest working man in internet radio is my father, George Wilder Jr., and here he is.
Here he is. All right, this is the George Wilder Jr. Show on Block Talk Radio. We're having a few difficulties here, folks. I hope you understand. It happens from time to time. It happens, and you got to keep a straight face on it. All right, Chris, are you still there?
I'm still here.
All right. Man, I'm sorry about this, but it just happens.
Oh, it's okay.
Every now and then it happens.
Okay.
Sometimes we have bad weather. Somebody's doing some construction over here, and this is the internet. What can I tell you? You know, so great. I was asking you about expiring writers. What would you tell expiring writers out there who want to write?
I would tell them to write. That's, I mean, that's really the big thing is this, you know,
yeah.
don't think so much about, oh, I want to be a writer. You just consider yourself a writer, open up a page, just start writing something every day. What I did is I started with journaling. I kept a journal every day.
Oh, yeah. You talked about it. Yeah.
And so just, you know, that really jumpstarts a lot of writing. You prime the pump that way. The creativity pops out of your head. So if you want to start writing, then write. That's all you have to do every day. Then no worries.
Just
put something on the paper every single day.
Would you say for someone to try to write what you know?
Yeah, definitely. Definitely write what you know.
Definitely write what you know. All right, can you tell my audience before we have another glitch? can you tell my audience where they can find your book and find you?
Yeah, you can find my book on Amazon. It's right there on Amazon, or you can go to my website. Go to Chris Jones Inc. That's spelled with a K-I-N-K. .com. And if you go to, if you click on the book button, there's a free sample chapter. If you want to download a sample chapter, check it out and go for it, or you can buy it outright.
Chris, are you thinking about writing another book?
And I get that question a lot, and I want to let this book kind of hang for a little bit, but I want to expand it though, because I've learned so much more that I want to put into this actual book. So I want to actually PR section, because I've learned so much more about promotion over the last 6 to 7 months. So I'd probably like to expand this book.
Okay, so further, you want to actually get a little bit more out of this book before you want start another book.
Yeah, I'd like to do an expanded edition.
Yeah. But hey, I'm gonna be like any other writer talking to another writer. Hey, write another book. You know, I mean, that's what it's all about. Because writing is fun. It is great, and a book is like your staple. That's you. You know, it's like part of you. It's there. So I mean, hey, write another book. You know, on anything.
Yeah,
you know, on business.
That's true.
You know.
Yeah.
You know.
I've got plenty of fuel.
Hey.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. Thanks for being on the show, guy. And good luck.
All right. Thanks so much. All right. Take care.
You too. All right, that was Chris Jones on the George Wilder Jr. Show. We had a few glitz on the show. That happens from time to time. I'm going to take a little break right here, folks. We will be right back. You've been listening to the George Wilder Jr. Show, WTTY, on Blog Talk Radio. Be right back, folks.
Thank you.
welcome back to the show, everybody. I hope you enjoyed Chris Jones, and he was great. He was wonderful talking about the art of writing, and we do love writing. We talked a little bit about public speaking, two of the things that I think is going to be resonating with me in the coming weeks and months, because I'm really into public speaking and definitely writing. And it's fun, folks. Just like I was telling Chris, it is fun. It is totally fun. It's totally enjoyable. If you never thought about writing or being a writer, give it a go. I mean, do not criticize or demonize something that you've never tried before. Give it a shot at writing and go get Chris's book. He's a writer, author, and writing coach. If you need help, rewind the show and, pick up his email and check out his book on Amazon.com. All right, you're listening to the George Wilder Jr. Show on Block Talk Radio. Let's move right along, folks. I'm looking at the monitor here, and they're still talking about long lines at the airport. People are missing their flights, and this has been going on for a hell of a long time, maybe a few days, a few weeks, and it's been going on a long time, and I've been watching a lot of the video of people standing in line and being totally disenchanted and totally pissed off because they're missing their flights, because you got a zillion people standing in line waiting. Why are they standing in line waiting? From what I'm hearing, it's because a lot of these airlines, TSA, and a lot of these other airlines laid off employees. And the reasons why they're talking about it now, TSA. I'm looking at a bunch of long lines right now, folks. At this is the O'Hare Airport. This is ridiculous. They're trying to save money, pitching pennies, laying off people, laying off workers, and then making it miserable for those who are trying to board planes. That's crazy. If it was me, folks, if I was standing in one of them 3 or 4 5-hour lines and missing my flight, I probably would try to sue the airline. This is crazy. I booked the flight. I have my ticket. Why do I have to wait for 3 or 4 hours, maybe, and then not getting the flight out in the first place? You know, I'm spending my days in the airport when I'm trying to get home or I'm trying to go and visit my family. I would probably try to sue them, but all these people, I would think that somebody's probably thinking the same way I am, to sue these people. I'm looking at it right now on the video screen, folks, and this is crazy. This is just crazy. I would sue them. Maybe if they get a lot of lawsuits, maybe they'll try and straighten up their act and stop trying to step on people. You know, this is ridiculous. Well, they're saying that they're doing it because of terrorism. You have to think of a better way than doing that, than to disrupt people who have nothing to do with terrorism. You got to get your act together. You're the busiest airport in the country, and you're uplifting people's lives. They're missing their flights because you've laid off people. And now the federal government is trying to send some of these airlines money to hire more staffers to get these people through. You know, because politicians, I mean, they travel from here and there. They would also be one of the passengers waiting for 3 or 4 hours to catch a flight if they lucky enough to get a flight. You know, so I'm looking at it right now, folks, and it's ridiculous. I would sue them. I mean, the airlines are just trying to take advantage of people. I mean, when they first started charging for your baggage, for your luggage, I said, that's when it left me. I mean, I said, I can't do this. This is crazy, charging for your luggage. And then they remember when they went up because they kept saying the gas prices were so high, fuel prices were so high. So they went up on their prices and they start charging for luggage for this and that, penny pitching you here and that, here and there. You know, and now that the fuel prices have gone down, their prices have not gone down. things have gotten worse. You know, so my thing is, hey, wow, skip these planes, get you a train, get you a bus, drive, you know. But a lot of people don't want to do those things. And this is totally unfair for them to do this to people. It is totally unfair. All right, you're listening to the George Wilder Jr. Show, Making the World a Better Place, One Show at a Time. One show at a time. I want to thank my guest, author Chris Jones. I still have this information. Writer, author, and writing coach. Writing coach. The author of The Art of Business of Writing and A Practical Guide to Writing Life. The host of the Art and Business Writing Podcast. Hell, he's a radio co-host of the Convotion Radio on Freedom. Oh, okay. Maybe I can get to be on this show. Who knows? Who knows? Just about everybody come on this show. They've been on radio before. Some of them even been on television. Some people have been in the movies, you know. And that's great that you're getting other media people out here on the show. And they're listening to the George Wilder Jr. Show. And as they listen and as they have been on the show, they tell others about the show. And that's a great thing. And I duly appreciate that. I really do. And before Chris, I was talking about blacks and Latinos, how poverty seems to just be a part of black life. How the middle class African Americans are sinking into poverty, and our politicians are just letting it happen. How the west side and south side of the city of Chicago, where in these crime areas where murder shootings are just up. And this has been going on every day in the city of Chicago for years, and it's still going on. What are these leaders not doing? Are they racist? Some people are saying they're racist. I couldn't give 2 cents for Black Lives Matter. These people who call this group called Black Lives do not matter, it seems, with other blacks. If they're going to bitch about something, have them bitch about black people killing black people. If black lives matter, they should be bitching about blacks killing blacks. Blacks should not be shooting blacks, gunning down blacks, robbing, hitting blacks in the head. Black on black crime, as it was called years ago. It should go back to being called that, because that's what it is. And then we got politicians, leaders, who don't seem to give a damn. Barack Obama, he's from Chicago. He lives here. He calls Chicago his home. Why doesn't he step in and do something about the crime? Black Lives Matter. Why don't they step in and do something about the carnage on the west and south sides of the city? Rahm Emanuel, why doesn't he step in and do something about the carnage in the city? Governor Bruce Rauner of Illinois, why don't these people say something, do something about the crime? It's just, as I've just got through saying, if these killings and shootings and murders were in affluent areas, meaning if they were in rich areas where people had lots of money, this would not be happening. But this is in a poor area. My thinking was that they're trying to let all the black people shoot and kill themselves so they can get out of those crime-ridden neighborhoods on the south and west side of Chicago's, because that's prime real estate. Get them out of there. Let them shoot each other. And we'll go in there with the bulldozers, tear them down, bring in the architecture, and start building condos and businesses and all this kind of stuff and get them out. Some people are thinking that way. That basically this is just trying to get them out. Because there's been a lot of African Americans leaving the city of Chicago. The population used to be 3 million. It may be less than 2.5 million now. Because this is happening all the time. And I think they're sitting back and just letting this happen. Let them kill themselves. Let them do that. I mean, But these people are leaders. They are leaders. Their job is to represent the people of this state. No matter if they're poor, homeless, their job is to represent these people, protect these people. Why can't these politicians protect people from being shot, killed, and gunned down? I mean, so many women are being slaughtered by men. It's a damn shame. Every time you look on the news, it's always a woman shot in the head by a man, stabbed by her husband. He done stalked her, went to her job, pulled a bullet in her head, then he turns around and shoot himself. This is just ongoing. What do we have leaders for? Why do we have these people? Well, we have them because, you know, they wanted the job. We have them because a lot of people did not get their butts out there and vote. And I'm hearing now that Rauner and the legislature, these guys are trying to come up with a budget for the state of Illinois. I guess there's too many people who have gotten in his ass, because his Governor Rauner's approval rating in the state of Illinois has dropped dramatically. Maybe he's feeling some of that. He's been criticized by some of everybody, called names. And I've said many times that you can't have people disliking you, because if people dislike you, you can't get anything done. He's a weakened governor, but you're not going to hear him say that. You know, Rahm Emanuel is a weakened mayor, but you're not going to hear him say that, because he doesn't want you to think that, even though we're already thinking it. So, you know, we've got a long way to go. We've had 8 years of Obama, just about, and black people are in worse shape than they've ever been since he first took office during his first term in 2009. His approval rating, I believe, is at 60%. He's done nothing, exactly nothing, for black folks. Exactly nothing. I mean, he's done nothing for his home that he calls his home, Chicago, in trying to lower the shootings that's happening in this city every night. He hasn't said anything. We wanted Obama to come to Chicago because this was his home, he stated, to try to talk to some of these people on the west side, the south side of the city, to put the guns down. We think if he'd have came to the city, Obama, and address some of these gangbanging thugs on the south side and west sides of the city, that something would have occurred. We wanted that. We prayed for that. It never happened. We have called the White House, the switchboard, and we have stated these kinds of things. When Obama comes to Chicago, he comes for 10 minutes for a fundraiser, and then he's gone again, tying up traffic. A lot of people get pissed off about that. 8 years, and black people are still poorer than they've ever been. Racism is more prevalent than it's ever been. You got gay people, gay marriage, illegals. I'm not talking against those things, but I'm just saying Obama, President Barack Obama, brought them here. There's no doubt about it. We have gay marriage. Now he wants to let men into girls' bathroom if they identify themselves as being a woman or a girl, even though they still may have their sexual part that they were born with. That's ridiculous, okay? I don't see, yeah, Obama done some good things probably early back in his first year, but in his second year, he has done nothing. Gave a lot of lip service. But in his first year, man, we were surprised. In his first year, I think in President Obama's first year, to me, all he did was just run after the Republicans, and they just spit in his face. and I quote, "I've been over backwards and these guys kick me." Obama has also said that he wished he could have brought people together. And that's one of the things that I thought in his first term that he would do before he started chasing Republicans time after time after time after time after time, and even giving them Social Security. He gave it to them, but they turned it down, and some entitlement programs. And we were saying, wow, it was just one surprise after the next during Obama's first term. And I always say people gotten up out of their damn hospital beds, from their nursing homes, from their sick beds, to go down to the polls and vote for Obama. And he turned their back, and he turned his back on them like that. Michelle Obama says that she wants nothing whatsoever to do with politics. She's afraid of Republicans, just like her husband. She says she wants nothing to do with it. She can't wait to get out of the White House. I'm thinking the same thing with Obama. He cannot wait to get out of the White House, okay? He doesn't want to be there. He said he can't wait. He said, well, you got the next president to pick on, not me. You know, we wanted so much from Obama. We wanted him to be so much. And he's been one great disappointment. I know there's going to be people out there who's going to disagree with me. I'm going to hear it. I just know it. But hey, and I'm not the only one that's saying that. I'm not the only one that's saying this. A lot of people out here, African Americans, even white people, are saying the same thing. He's been a disappointment, especially in his second term. For one thing, he's for Hillary Clinton, and a majority of black folks are with Bernie Sanders. Hillary Clinton, it will be, if she's elected, will be an extension of Barack Obama. She might even give him a cabinet post, you know, in her administration. She's going to be the second leg of Obama. Hillary Clinton is bought and paid for. She's Wall Street. She's Goldman Sachs. Bernie Sanders gets his money from you, me, the poor, the middle class. He doesn't have to take money to become bought off like Hillary Clinton and some of the Republicans. So I'm going to say it again. I'm totally disappointed in Obama. You know, I mean, he just can't. Right now, if Obama does something, right now, May 17th, 2016, if Obama does something wild in the White House or does something memorable, he's trying to think of things to do right now for us to remember him by once he is out of office. He's trying to do something monumental, like visiting Cuba or someplace, you know, something. If he wants to do something monumental for us African Americans to remember him by, he should go to some of these places on the south and west sides of his city, Chicago, talk to these gangbangers, talk to these thugs, talk to these prostitutes just walking around, and help them to try to get their lives together and stop destroying themselves and stop destroying their communities, that he would be a great voice. He doesn't need to talk to them from the Oval Office. He needs to get his ass out of the Oval Office, come from out from under the bed, and come to some of these places in Chicago where the shootings are prevalent, and talk to these young men to put the guns down, stop the gangbanging, stop the shooting, stop the senseless murder. This is what we want. This is what we've been hoping that he would do. This is what we have been praying for him to do, and he knows it, but he will not do it. For so long, I have called Barack Obama a coward. For so long, the Republicans have called him a coward. For so long, I have called him the young boy in the playground being picked on by bullies, the Republicans. The Republicans knock him down, hit him on the ground, kick him, but Obama gets back up and hands them a piece of candy. That's the way it's been with me with Obama. I don't want to – dig this, folks. I voted for Obama twice, once in 2008, next in 2012. I voted for him twice. So I feel like I have all the authority and the reason in the world to criticize him if I don't think he's done a great job. I'm pretty sure a lot of people out there disagree with me because from what I'm hearing, his approval rating in the black community is 60%. I don't know how the hell that is, but it is. If that's true, I don't see it. But if that's true, you know, some people just, you know, don't see things the way I see it. But I'm totally, totally disappointed in him. And I'm not the only one saying that. I'm totally disappointed in him. And I wish he could have been a better president for African Americans. Even Donald Trump said it. Barack Obama hasn't done anything for African Americans. And other people have said it. Bill O'Reilly has said it. The crime in Chicago, don't expect Barack Obama to do anything. Don't expect Al Sharpton to do anything. Don't expect anything from Black Lives Matter. Don't expect anything from Rahm Emanuel. Don't expect anything from Governor Bruce Rauner. They do not care that black people are killing each other, slaughtering each other. They don't care, because if they cared, this would have ended. You wouldn't have 50 shootings every damn weekend. You wouldn't have 9 people shot dead every weekend in the ghetto, in the slum areas, because they don't give a damn. They may be racist. I've heard people call them racist. The reason why they continue to let the crime go on in these great communities in the city of Chicago. All right, you're listening to the George Wilder Jr. Show on Blog Talk Radio. Follow me on Facebook. Follow me on, folks, it's just my rant. It's just, I'm just ranting here. All righty. But it is totally a shame. right, welcome back to the George Wilder Jr. Show. Welcome back to the George Wilder Jr. Show on Blog Talk Radio. Thank you so much. I want to thank my guest once again, Chris Jones. And he was great. He was wonderful. Always trying. Oh, we have a smart quiz question. Let me answer it right quick before we're off the air. Who lived in America before the European? Who lived in? Let me read it slowly. Who lived in America before the Europeans arrived? Anybody know? It was someone just whispered in my ear. Screamed in my ear. Actually, 60 seconds. Okay, let me read the smart quiz questions again. Who lived in America before the Europeans arrived? It's a Constitution question. It was the Indians, folks, the Native Americans. And Europeans came and stole it, as they say, away from them. All right, join me tomorrow on the Talk About Times, the George Wilder Jr. Show. And we should have more fun, folks. My guest will be Michelle Dutro. That should be fun. All righty. Let's see if we can't play our way out of this. All right. I'll see you tomorrow, folks. Thanks a lot. Bye-bye. Okay.